There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Benched with Bubba, episode 41, your U.S. Open preview. We got another golf major kicking off this weekend. So I'm going to bring back our usual golf expert. You can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing today?
Doing well, Bubba. Thanks for having me on again. Glad to be here. So freaking pumped for this golf tournament this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to try to figure out how I was going to mention this, but you kind of led me to it. We know why you're pumped, because my friend, I got done golfing this weekend, and I looked at my phone. I was kind of off Twitter, and one of the first things I see is a screenshot that says, I won a dome ticket to qualify in the Thunderdome. That is amazing, man. Congratulations.
Oh, it was so epic. It was so epic. And I don't play a whole lot of qualifiers, but I threw my one main lineup in that one and was just like, you know, who knows? It's just winner take all and that stuff, 400 people plus. So you got to get lucky. And I hit it on the nail on the head this week, this past week.
Yep. Now you got to build that big, important, biggest lineup of your life.
Oh, man. It's nerve wracking. I mean, I've been in big contests before, but nothing is, that's nearly comes to close to $5,300 entry.
Yeah. The good old country club's a little different than the Thunderdome.
Sure.
Well, good. Well, as we break down the U.S. Open, we'll get a little idea of where you're at on that one and go from there. But let's recap some recent golf. I know we've talked in the past about how awesome it is with, like, I don't know if parity is the right word, but a lot of the young golfers, and just anything can happen on any weekend right now. There's not that – you know, Dustin's pretty dominant, but there's not really a dominant force out there right now. We saw it recently. Siwoo came out of nowhere, a huge underdog with a big win. Then Duff Daddy, after screwing us all over in the DFS world the week before, comes back and just lights it up. What are your thoughts on some of these recent winners?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you touched on Siwoo there. He, before and after pretty much his win at the Players Championship, which is considered the fifth major, one of the biggest golf tournaments of the year, has been awful. I mean, since he won the Players Championship, missed cut, withdrew. Before that, he had a 22nd, missed cut, withdrew, 30th, 49th. I mean, there's just nothing there to point where this guy is going to potentially win this golf tournament. He comes in at $6,600 on DraftKings that weekend too. But I watched a lot of that golf tournament, and he had won – of the best drivers off the deck in the rough that I've ever seen in my life. So when he hit that shot, I kind of knew he was on, and it was his deal to win. And then, like you said, last week, Duffner – or 2 weeks ago, I guess now, Duffner blitzed the field in the first 2 days. I mean, he was just hitting the ball so pure and finally making all kinds of putts. And then, of course, he has a meltdown on Saturday, only to come back and finish it off on Sunday. I myself was big time on Duffner that week, and I know – you and a few others, unfortunately, weren't. But I had a feeling that people were going to see bias, which I've talked about in the article last week. I'll talk about more about it this week too. But basically, where you know, guy misses a cut, and then people just totally fall off of him. And I was really surprised on Duffner; he came in at 3% pretty much across the board. But his form previous to that was really, really good. So it was trending in the right direction. He just had one bad weekend, which if you play golf is very much possible at any point, you know.
Well, and people forget with Duffner, he basically missed it by what, one or two strokes when he went double or triple, like right at the end. He basically almost made the cut and everyone been happy.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was that far off.
I think he took like a double or triple from the middle of the fairway on 17 or 18 the week before. And it was just one of those epic meltdowns. And so it burnt everybody because he was like 20-30% owned that week before. And so everybody was off of him. Next week kind of forgot about him. Luckily I was able not to. And so I had a pretty good week 2 weeks ago as well. But then also again, of course, this past week. So it's been a pretty good couple weeks for me, DraftKings wise.
And let's keep that heater going this weekend. But yeah, definitely something to think about, recency bias. Like another guy that same week or the week after, like Kyle Stanley, and then he comes back and plays well this week. It's so true, and people don't understand that. And I hope they're paying attention to the rest of the article and not just the picks in your pieces. And that's something to keep in mind because golf is such a fickle game, and it's just a couple holes can ruin a whole weekend. And it's different courses, different weekends, but still the best golfers in the world. So
right,
it's like, come on, people. But yeah, really interesting stuff there. And more to come. And I got to know where Berger this past weekend, the St. Jude defend back-to-back St. Jude championships. It's just, it's crazy. It's fun.
Yeah. No, it was a blast. But this past weekend too, because I don't know if you watched any of it, Duff or Berger on the first hole pulls his drive left, jerks another one up into the tall stuff, chips out short, and then chips in for par right off the bat. And so, you know, that pretty much saved his – pretty much won the golf tournament for him right there on the first hole. Little did he know that, of course. But game, and a lot of people will give these guys hard times, and it's just – because if you play golf, you know how difficult it is. Get out there and play it if you don't.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's very mental, and that kind of stuff will help big time when it comes to that mental aspect of the game. Let's start talking U.S. Open, second major of this year. We previewed the Masters, which was amazing, so we're hoping the Open, you know, keeps it going. Some past winners, you know, DJ won it last year, hung on. You had Spieth win it the year before. Had Keimer, Justin Rose, Webb Simpson, of all people. The list goes on and on. They switched the courses up. Can you explain kind of what the USGA is and explain kind of how this is not a PGA event, even though it is a PGA event?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So the PGA is just your Professional Golfers Association, and they pretty much sanction all of the golf tournaments during the year except for a few, the Masters, the U.S. Open, and then the British Open. And the British Open is sanctioned by the RNA, and then the U.S. Open is sanctioned by the USGA, which the USGA is the United States Golfers Association, which anybody can belong to who wants to, whether you're a golfer or not. You pay your dues. You're a member of the USGA. What they do is they go into a golf course, a year or two in advance. You know, sometimes, like in particular with this one, I've heard they've been there for a few years kind of grooming it, and they basically take over the golf course and make it into what they want to make it into. And one thing that they've kind of been doing here recently, and I think is pretty cool, is going to these public golf courses. Chambers Bay was public. I'm pretty sure Oakmont's private, and then Erin Hills is also public. And so it's one of those things where if you're traveling around or you want to go and go play the same type of golf course, you can do that, you know, a few weeks after this one's over with, so you can get a tee time, which I'm sure they're booked up forever. But one way or the other, they go in and they just do whatever they possibly want to do to a golf course, whatever trendy thing that they're trying to bring into the golf world is. And they've recently, you know, done some things that are debatable. So we'll see how it turns out this year.
Yeah, because we'll get into some little course previewing here, and you've seen Kevin Na's video. If people haven't seen that, that's something worth looking at because that kind of went viral quick when he put that out. I believe Lee Westwood came out with one today. I saw something about that. There's a lot of guys talking about this course setup. Before we get into tons of details, what were your thoughts on the Kevin Na video?
Kevin, you know, he's kind of a weird guy, in my opinion. But one way or the other, you know, it's right there off of the playing, the quote-unquote playing surface or whatever. And you know, I heard a little bit more kind of about why it's so thick in that type of area today. And it's because of the kind of overspray when they're spraying the first cutter, primary cutter rough in the fairway. It just kind of blows out into that part of the fescue, which makes it blow up even more and become thicker because it's being fertilized and watered more than the other parts. And the issue with that is it's right there, right off the rough. So instead of it being, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards deep, it's as soon as you step into it. But if you go past the initial 3, 4, 5 yards, you're actually into some playable fescue that's not as tall and as thick as that right off the rough. And that's an issue, but apparently that's a problem anywhere you have fescue on any golf course. And so I think myself, and I talk about this in the article that'll be coming out before too long, but I'll talk about it now too. I think it's being overblown because if you look at the golf course, I don't know. I just don't know how much that's really going to come into play.
Yeah, no, and you're not the only one to say that. I've seen other golfers tweet out that, sure, it's going to be a problem, but the way he did that video, they're saying you got to really be in a bad spot for that to happen, basically. Because, heck, I played somewhere this weekend, and on one of the courses, they had grass all along the fairway. We pulled up to the first tee, and we're like, well, if we ever had to hit it straight, it was today, because if you get in that grass, all you can really do is punch it out, which is fine. But these guys are pros. They're going to know what to do with this stuff, and it's not going to – you know, anything's going to kill you if you're not hitting it down the fairway all day long, but this is a different deal. Let's get into a little bit of the course. I've got some numbers here that just were mind-blowing to me when I saw them yesterday. 652 acres, which is 4 times the average course. It's 6 miles of walking up and down, so pray for the caddies. from the tips, it's 8,348, but they're not playing the tips. The course is going to play about 7,693 yards, which is still pretty impressive. The biggest part with this course, because of that fescue and some other things, is the wind has a tendency to go from about 24 to 28 miles an hour when it gets kicking. So that'll be the deciding factor. And as I know you tweet out a lot, you mentioned in your articles, maybe check the weather, check, you know, the winds, because tee times could be very big in this respect. What are your takeaways by kind of the layout of this course?
It's going back to a more traditional type of course as far as the par 72. So traditional 4 par 5s, 4 par 3s, or S par 4s. I'm excited about the fact that they're throwing in 2 more par 5s again. I think it only adds to the game if you can watch guys make birdies versus struggling around to make pars on all kinds of par 4s and just continuously play par 4s, you know, every other hole or every hole, it seems like. So I'm really, really excited about that. And the par 5s, you know, they can get up over 600 yards. They will move the tees around on those every day. So some could be longer, some could be shorter. But I think they're going to be attackable by these guys. You know, there's some really you mentioned the amount of space here. If you go and do some research on this golf course, it's really, really cool, the story behind the whole entire thing. But it's more or less untouched ground as far as they didn't move around a whole heck of a lot of dirt to make this golf course. So it's all like natural kind of stuff, which is, you know, really, really cool. I don't know if you saw too, but Ted Scott, who is Bubba Watson's caddy, put out a video about how he had to lay down. He was doing like a selfie and, you know, he's like, I guess, implying how difficult it is to walk. So and I've seen some people talk about that angle, but, you know, Chambers Bay was a difficult one to walk too. So read into that.
It kind of makes me think right now because it's super hilly, rolling hills, all this stuff. It's 6 miles, so it's going to put a lot on a guy's walking, especially with a bag on their back. What makes me wonder, because we saw Chambers Bay, is how good is Jason Day's little issue? I think he's fine too, but that'd be interesting because he tweeted out today that it was very draining, his practice round.
Oh, really? Oh God!
Yeah, I said, something along those lines. I think he shot like a 70. I said it was extremely like a draining round of golf.
Oh God! I don't want to deal with that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was like, but yeah, we got, I think it's four par fives. I was reading something earlier that, five par fives. It's four, damn it. One should be reachable and two by everybody. And then you need to be a big boy to get to three of them and two. So there's something to look at there. And then there's four par fours over 500 yards. So if that wins like a in your face or something, getting there in two is going to be a lot of work.
It will be for a lot of guys. The golf course, hole number one is a par five and the hole number 18 is a par five. So having 18 as a par five again will be really, really, really cool. It's a couple years ago, Chambers Bay, they had the 18th par five. And of course, TJ three jacked it to lose. But I think that's a really cool aspect too, is having a scoreable, birdieable hole at the end. To add some excitement and some flair to the golf tournament. And I think that's a really smart way to do it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And there's what I was looking for. Yeah, the 18th hole is amazing. It's a par five, 637 yards. So yeah. It's going to be a fun one to watch. But let's get into some of the key stats. What are some of the key stats you're looking for? I know it's kind of – you have to kind of guess off of other courses because it's the first time they're playing here, but what would you look into for key stats?
Well, one major thing that I look at, and it's not necessarily a stat, but just overall U.S. Open history. I mentioned it a lot already in the article about just traditionally playing well at the U.S. Open, I think translates to going to another U.S. Open course. They're not always obviously set up the same, but at the same time, they are done by the same people. So a lot of aspects are the same, and they're all difficult. And, a lot of the key stats remain the same. It's just more of a concentration on a particular few. You know, I still care about driving distance. I think it's still going to be a factor this week. You know, I've heard that the fairways are going to be a little more spongy and bouncy. And then obviously the hills add a little bit to the roll aspect of the deal. But I still want guys who can get over some of the trouble. But at the same time, they need to be accurate, of course. Accuracy, for me, maybe not as big of a deal. Because if you do the flyover, if you look at the flyover, which is – on I think USGA.com or Aaron Hills or the US Open website, you can see it on YouTube as well. But it's pretty, the fairways themselves are very, very wide, and then there's obviously a primary cut of rough. So going back to the whole fescue thing, that's why I don't know that it's going to be that huge of a deal. I mean, you have to get way off course in order to get up in that fescue or get a really, really bad bounce, which I'm sure is going to happen. And I think it'll happen this week, but I'm just not playing as much into the whole type of thing. I played in a golf course for a long time. It was my home course until it closed down, and we had tall grass on it. We called it something different than fescue. But, I don't fear it that much. I was a young golfer playing in that. I hit it in all the time, and I don't know. I think it's overblown. Another big one for me is scrambling. Guys are going to miss greens because the greens here are relatively small. And then they're going to bounce down and away and roll and end up in weird spots where they're chipping out. And then hitting greens in regulation is obviously a very important stat. It always is for me. And then putters, I'm putting a little emphasis on putting. Because I'm not looking for guys to make birdie putts here. I'm looking for guys who can two putt 50 feet. I think that's going to be really, really important.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that last part. The two putting thing is going to be huge because, like those long par fours, if you get there in two, I think I was reading to get there in two from between two and 220 out, the average distance to the pin is 44 feet in the PGA this year or something. So see a lot of birdies. Let's just be realistic about it.
That's not going to happen. I just want guys who can legitimately lag putt and then make a 3 or 4 footer if they have to finish it off. That's what I that's what I'm looking for.
No, that's a great point. And the other thing I didn't mention with past winners is if people aren't familiar with the U.S. Open for some reason, you're not looking at, you know, explosive scores. We're not going to get the Tiger Woods big numbers and stuff like that. McIlroy had a big one. But most of the time, heck, we had a couple plus ones. Dustin Johnson was minus four last year. So you're not getting the big boy numbers out here.
Right.
So pars are very, very good.
Yeah, I think a good score, you know, is obviously a par, but I think the final round score is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think people can get to five under with the four par fours or four par fives every day. I think that five under is realistic to get to. So it's going to depend a lot on the wind, like you already talked about. A little bit of rain in the forecast potentially, so it might soften some things up. But I've also heard that it's not overly dry out there at this point. So we'll see how they continue to set it up. But if they don't make it too awful hard, I think that, you know, into the single digits under par is very possible this week.
Yeah, one last thing before we get into the players. I completely agree with the distance on this. It's not just because it's a longer course, but it's – I might be speaking out of school, but it's kind of a links style, if not a links course. Yep. And that gives you so much roll. If you can get that top spin going on those drives, like it was a couple tournaments ago, you saw DJ hitting it like four something or three, 370 or whatever the hell it was. I'm not saying it's going to go that far here, but if he hits the right one with the spin going the right way, it'll roll for a while. So like that's going to be so huge compared to like as much as you like a guy like Jordan Spieth. Well, Spieth doesn't hit it long. So given he'll have some better, you know, with the rolling is going to help, but still there's going to be a gap there.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah. That's very, 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 very big.
You're talking, you know, a difference of a guy maybe hitting 220 into a green versus, you know, maybe in the 190-ish range. And yeah, I want the guys hitting 190 instead of the guys hitting 220. Yeah,
exactly. So I like it. And it's a quote I'll never forget. It was in a Golf Digest almost probably a year ago now. It's the one piece where they like ask like five questions to every golfer, or a golfer takes you through a hole and what clubs he's going to use. And it was Dustin Johnson. And someone said, well, why would you hit driver here if a three would replace you here, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, I hit driver every time I can hit driver. I don't care if I miss it 30 yards to the left or the right. I'm still going to be 30 to 40 yards farther down the fairway than you guys are. So my approach is easier.
Right. And these greens are – the landing areas here are so big as far as the fairway cut, that missing it, you know, not missing it. You obviously can't miss it terribly bad, but missing it a little bit is going to be okay. And Dustin's played that, is playing that big smooth draw now. So, you know, he's got that in his bag. I think that'll be beneficial this week.
Cool. Well, we won't bore people with this even more, even though it's not boring to me, but we know what people came here for. They want their DFS info. That doesn't mean don't read the article. The article's really good. It's getting posted right after we finish this. So don't not read the article. But let's get into it. We have DraftKings and FanDuel. Since it's just one-on-one, I was going to ask you anyways. FanDuel switched to the eight-man field instead of the six – or the original eight-man where it was four for the first 2 days, four for the last two. Now it's eight for the whole tournament.
Right.
What are your thoughts on, like, the first weekend of that going down?
You know, I've dabbled in it a little bit. I haven't really put the time and effort into it to be successful at it. My biggest issue with FanDuel at this point is they don't have the ability to pull like ownership percentages and cut made percentages off of their website. So it really deters me from playing there if I don't know what I'm playing against. And that kind of thing. So, I don't know. Hopefully, though, I've seen some people tweet at them about that. I hope they change that. I am playing on there this week. I'm going to dabble a little bit in the 555. There's a $555 buy-in over there, and it's $100,000 to first. So, I'm going to try my hand at that. But they do have some bigger tournaments over there this week, too, that are bigger than what they usually would. So, I'll be interested to see if they actually can fill some of these up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Between the two sites, cause I know you and some others we talk to regularly, you guys have actually started looking at these contests like a week ago or something. Between FanDuel and DraftKings, are there any like out of the ordinary contests that look pretty good that aren't like, you know, $400 or $500, but are pretty good compared to the normal fields besides your Thunderdome ticket?
Yeah, they. I was wanting to mention the three entry maxes. They've bumped those up way up, really, from what they usually have. There's a $20 three entry max, which is about probably two times bigger than what it usually is. And then the $5 three entry max is $23,000, which is a pretty big tournament for three entry max. So if you're into the, you know, trying to get away from the multi-entry or whatever. And then, of course, the Albatross, the $12 Albatross is up to 9,600 people. That's a pretty big prize pool as well. DraftKings really, really, did a good job with their lineup selection or their lineup of contests this week. And they've put their neck out there. So I don't think you'll have any problem filling them. But there's some really, really good contests if you're trying to stay away from the millie or you're just trying to throw in maybe one or two lineups and not fight against the guys who are putting in 150 or 300 lineups. So those single entries and the three entry maxes, I think, are really good.
Cool. All right, let's get into some players. We'll start in the 10,000 and above range. We got DJ, Spieth, McIlroy, Day, Fowler, Ram, and Sergio. Which ones really catch your eye and are kind of the guys you're focusing around?
Well, so my biggest thing week in and week out is trying to predict and see ownership. And I talk about it all the time, and I talk about it this week in the article too. And so trying to figure out who the lowest owned guys of those, because like they're all so good and so could win week in and week out. If I'm on the guy, I'm trying to find the guy who's the lowest owned. I don't know who that's going to be, but the guys that I like in particular above 10,000 in order would be Sergio, DJ, Day, and potentially Fowler. Now, Fowler completely depends on how much he's touted this week. If he's highly touted, I'm not going to be on the Fowler train. But if he's not, then I think he's a good sneaky play, kind of like the Duffner or the Rafa Cabrera Bayo plays of the last couple of weeks would be. And so those would be kind of my four. Now, you can make a case for Jordan Spieth, you know, and I probably wouldn't argue against you. You can make a case for Rory. My issue with Rory right now is the back. We already talked about walking 6 miles up and down hills. You know, he's still got the back issue. Whether or not how well off he is at this point is unknown to me. So he kind of scares me a little bit. And then John Rahm, I don't know. He hits the ball long, far, straight. Case and a half. I don't know if you've been watching him, but he has just almost lost it on the golf course a few times.
Yeah, the wrong thing's 100% accurate because when it goes bad in a hurry, and his mannerisms out there. He starts just yelling. He's all over the place. This course would eat him alive.
Yeah. I mean, it will if you get too up in your head. One thing doesn't go your way, whatever, you know, before you know it, you've made a quad and you're out of the golf tournament. And I mean, I think he's going to be a really, really, really good golfer. It's just, he's really young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just one of those things where at this point, I don't know, maybe it's wrong, but I don't know that I'll have any John Rahm this week at all whatsoever. I might throw one lineup in just to kind of hedge a little bit, but I think he's also going to be popular. That's another reason why I don't really necessarily want to be on him because I do think he's going to be up there in ownership, probably the 20-30% range.
Yeah, everybody still loves him. His future is going to be freaking amazing once he gets his stuff together, kind of like it took DJ a while. It's just once they figure it out, it's going to be scary. But the Ricky Fowler deal, I like that you mentioned. I was going to ask you about him. It's kind of weird for me because, yes, I think he's a really good golfer, but if you look at his price tag compared to maybe somewhere I talk about, say, in the nines, to me, he's overpriced compared to some of those guys. Now, I could be totally misreading this, and I've seen like half my Twitter feed loves him, half are saying fade him. So I have no idea what the heck's going on with him right now.
Well, you know, he misses the cut last week at the St. Jude. That doesn't bother me at all. I mean, you know, who knows what he was thinking or going through. I don't even know why he was there, to be honest with you. I really – wasn't on mind. He agreed to go down there. Might have been some kind of sponsorship deal. But second at the Memorial. He played really, really well at the Memorial. The big thing about Ricky is he can putt lights out. And he's also one of the longest, straightest hitters on tour as well. But, you know, if he's up there in ownership, I don't really want much of him either. It just depends. I mean, it really is going to come down to watching how much he's touted out there and then making the decision probably, you know, Wednesday evening. I'll probably have a little piece one way or the other, but whether or not I go full bore or back off will come down to that. But he's got the game, and it's, you know, he's due. There's also the due factor too.
Yep. It's definitely something that does exist. Let's get into the next range of golfers, the 8K to 9,900. You got Rose, Matsuyama, Henrik Stenson, Koepka, Adam Scott, Brendan Grace, Phil Mickelson, Casey, Justin Thomas, Bubba, Duffner, and Berger. I did read somewhere that it's been years, if ever, I don't think it's ever happened, where the previous week's winner won the U.S. Open. So if you were thinking about doing Berger for some reason, there's that on your side. But what are you leaning towards in this department?
I like myself. I'm really, really high on Henrik. I thought he was going to be sneakier until I heard a few people saying his name, and it's kind of ruined my sneaky factor. But he has the game that kind of fits into the tee to green as far as can hit three-wood off the tee, can hit it straight and long, very accurate, very good long iron player. And, you know, is just kind of the ideal type of golfer. He was – my thinking was he was over here for March and April, played in the Arnold Palmer, Houston Open, the Masters, miscut. So a lot of the people in the United States didn't really pay much attention after the miscut three straight weeks. He makes the cut at the Players Championship, 16th. Third at the BMW Championship, which is a really big European golf tournament. And then 26th at another Nordea Masters, another European golf tournament. So he's been trending back in the right direction after three straight weeks of just trash golf when he was over here playing initially. So I was thinking a lot of people would be off him, but now I've heard his name quite a bit, so I'm not real sure how that'll be. But I like the price myself. One thing that I have learned over the last few weeks is that more balanced lineups are actually doing better than the stars and scrubs types of lineups. Because what DraftKings is trying to do to us is make a lineup where we feel comfortable with Dustin Johnson in it. Previously, you had to dig deep to even fit a Dustin Johnson type of golfer in your lineup and not really feel comfortable with it. Well, now with the pricing, I can put Dustin Johnson in there with almost probably – five other top 50 golfers in the world, which is just insane. So that's what they're trying to do. So that's how everybody's thinking. Everybody's going that way. So when that happens, you got to figure out something else. And then going more balanced. It worked last week. It worked the week before. So I'm thinking balance this week, starting with, either Sergio or Henrik. I'm a big Sergio fan, so I didn't talk about him, but I do like Sergio as well. He's right at 10,000. So, and then kind of getting on down, Adam Scott, that price is ridiculous in my opinion. His putter's terrible, but still love the tee to green game. And then Paul Casey, I think he's a great value too at 8,400.
I'm really glad. Well, a couple things to touch on. Henrik Stenson, I would have expected to be low too, and just for the fact he has burned so many of us this year.
He did. Like,
so many. How many tournaments, Jesse, have we been like, oh, this is Henrik's time? And then he literally goes and shits the bed. It's like he looks like me out there golfing, but I'm not a pro.
The worst was literally when he was in the water with no clothes on and then chipping it out and then chipping on the green with his wedge, putting it in with the wedge. I mean, at that point, it was, I'm done with Henrik Stenson forever, type of mood. But inevitably, I always get back on the train at some point.
Well, and it's a good point. And the thing is, especially for a GPP, just looking at DraftKings stats, not even going into a bunch because I don't have all those windows open, but he's made 7 of 11 cuts. And in those 7 cuts, he has 5 top 10s. So when he's right, he's bringing it. He's that good. So yes, there's a lot to be said about that. The other thing I wanted to mention was I love the comment on the more balanced lineups. I started toying with that. For a while there, I was making a bunch of lineups. I've kind of cut it back recently because just the tournaments, but I'll probably be an idiot and go deep again this weekend because there's a lot I like. Because you have, when you have this many good golfers, there's so much more variety you can build. I love the balanced approach because some of the tournaments I've done that on the bigger ones. I remember I showed you guys one time I made like all lineup of all 8,000 to 9,000 guys. And that one, I think in our Junkies League, which is, if people understand, it's more competitive than most GPPs you see. I think I finished in the top 10 there, which has pumped me up. Yeah. But it's like week in and week out, it's you don't need to pay up. I start almost 10,000 below on most of my lineups. Now I'll sprinkle in. You can't not play like a DJ or something like that. But it to go heavy, I totally agree with the balanced approach. A lot more can get done. And you look at these guys – you know, you might not win the nuts, but to also win the nuts, you have to have like X amount in the top 10.
Right.
And if you get day, then you go three guys in the sixes. How many of those guys in the sixes are realistically getting in the top 10?
Not many. Like, and that's the thing, like that you're taking you're taking a chance on, but at the same time, you're taking the same chance that everybody else is doing in the field.
Yeah.
So if you start at a different spot, then you're automatically making your lineup different and you're able to fit in different guys that would not even be considered on the quote unquote stars and scrubs types of lineups. Because you're not going to go Dustin Johnson with Jason Day and then be able to fit in two more, you know, mid price guys. You're going to have to dip way down and then maybe come back up and get one. So that's what I've been thinking here more recently, and it's worked out. So I'm probably going to try to employ that again this week because, like I said, DraftKings is trying to steer everybody, and it's very comfortable to go stars and scrubs and just, you know, get two or three of the top guys and then take some good names down below. I mean, there's some really, really good names in the six below 7,000. We'll talk about those here in a little bit, but it's very, very possible.
And that's the other thing is the last like month, maybe 2 months, there's been a lot of really good players in that 7,000 range that I don't know if really? It's people just don't know who they are yet or what it is, but you can do a lot of damage in that range almost weekly right now.
It started, you know, 3 months ago and, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. And just like weekend golf, we've talked about this in the past. People don't catch on. I don't know how it doesn't, but somehow the public, I don't know. Maybe I guess they don't do it as much as we do. I don't know. Like I'm doing this like 4 years a week. So it's like,
you know. Yeah, true. True. I just want to mention three more names in this region and it just quick hit them. You don't have to go deep on them. Just kind of give me your thoughts because I've seen their names out there a lot. And out of curiosity, there's always Matsuyama. So if he's bringing it, he's really competitive, but you never know what you're getting with him. Brooks, who's a bomber. So I'm curious there. He's actually been playing well the last month or so. And then I've seen a lot of talk about Brendan Grace. So give us a little quick hit on those three.
Yeah, with Decky, I don't mind him. He's just like, I don't know, he has a tendency to kind of spray it. So he gets cut last year, 18th the year before, 35th, 10th. Not terrible course history, or U.S. Open history, I should say. But he's kind of like a John Rahm type of guy, just not probably as flamboyant as far as when his head goes off, he's gone. So for the price, you know, for me, I'd rather, you know, grab Henrik, save a little bit of money. Brooks, I think he's overpriced, in this field. I'm not a fan this week. Been on him the last few weeks. I'll probably have none this week. He does have decent U.S. Open history though. So he does have that going for him. So I wouldn't talk somebody out of playing him in a few GPP lineups. I just think he's overpriced. But then again, you know, if you start your lineups with Brooks and build around him, you're going to be different probably because he's going to be in the probably below 10% range. And who was the last one? Did you say Brendan Grace?
Yeah, Grace.
Yeah. I like Grace. And he's kind of a little bit overpriced, but at the same time, fifth and fourth the last 2 years. Hard to argue with that at the U.S. Open. So he made the picks too on the old article there. So I'll have a little bit of him as well this week.
Perfect. Let's move it into the 7K range. I'm not going to list them all off. There's quite a few of them.
Yeah.
So why don't you highlight some of the ones you're really looking at?
Sure. First and foremost, I think Matt Kuchar is way underpriced. He's not necessarily what you think of as a bomber. He's averaging around 290 off the tee. Not terrible. About mid-pack for the PGA Tour. But he's that kind of guy who hits a lot of greens. He can scramble. He doesn't three-putt a lot. And is just kind of your level-headed type of, you know, like if you're playing golf with your dad, as you're throwing clubs, he's just standing over there saying, "I'll shoot," you know, that kind of thing. So he just kind of – it sticks out to me. He's also pretty high up on my model this week. So I like Cooch. And then I think a sneaky type of play in this area is going to be Brant Snedeker. And it's going to depend on how, like I said, how highly touted – it's all these guys are – depends on how highly touted they are. But one way or the other, Brant has kind of been battling a wrist injury, but he putts lights out. So I'm going to have some Brant Snedeker and hope that he gets overlooked quite a bit. He's not been playing the greatest golf. He's GPP only for me. But I will, you know, dabble with some Brant this week. And then other golfers, I like Louis. I like Louis Oosthuizen a lot. Got really, really good U.S. Open course or U.S. Open history. Been playing very, very solid golf. Really good prices, $7,400. And then dipping down a little bit, that's for me, you know, there's a few more plays in particular right around the 7,000 range. I do think Alex Noren's going to be pretty popular at 7,500. I've already seen his name floated a few times. And then another good play, I think, two good plays right at 7,000. Martin Keimer, past champion, $7,000. What? Give me that all day. And then Francisco Molinari playing really solid golf right now, $7,000. He's just a tee to green giant. He's a small guy. He can't putt. So That's his only issue, but – he's getting that price is just ridiculous to me at $7,000.
Yeah, that's crazy with Molinari. If he brings his flat stick, that guy is definitely a contender this weekend. But that's a big if.
That's a big if. No, dude, it's tilting to watch him putt. It's because he'll throw it in there at 5 foot and then miss it by 2 feet. And it's just like, what? How is this even possible? You're a professional golfer, but that's his drawback. So that's kind of what scares me a little bit on him. But like I said before, and we're not talking about making all these putts. If you can throw it in there tight and then two putt and make a par, I'm still going to be ecstatic about it this week. It's the only week of the year that this happens. So
yeah, and Molinari's good for that.
Yeah. Solid, just boring par golfer kind of guy.
Okay, I got a couple questions on guys here. For one, it's a big foreigner department, the 7K range. And I've seen a ton of names. One that he's burned me lately, and I haven't used him in a while since. But I've seen a lot of questions on Tommy Fleetwood. What's your thoughts on Tommy?
Tommy, he tore me up at the Masters. I don't know.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Because I watched him hit some great shots when I was at the Masters, and then I went all in, and he just – rip me a new one, but I don't know. I'm not. I'll have none this week. No.
What about the big man? He finally won on the Euro Tour. Thomas Peters. He's had some really good weekends over here, and he's a big boy hitter. Do you think he's worth a dart?
I think so. Other than the fact that he's probably going to be 20-25% owned, but I think what's going to happen with a lot of people is they're going to go DJ then Peters. Particularly Millie and smaller buy-ins, he's a well-known name as far as well-known goes in the golf world for a Euro. Probably the most well-known guy of them all because he's been there. My issue is really with him is, you know, kind of erratic off the tee. And that scares me a little bit. I think there's potential for him to get in trouble. He busts it, but – sometimes we don't know where it's going. So I'm more of a fade for ownership on him, though.
Okay, a couple more. What about Kisner and Big Pat Reed? Anything on those two?
Yeah, I've seen Kisner's name floated quite a bit. I don't mind Kisner. I've never really been a whole big Kisner fan, but it's hard to argue with his form. You know, sixth of the Memorial, first, Dean DeLuca, 56th at the Players. Not real sure how he's been at the U.S. Open. Let's see here. He is 49th, 12th cut. It's not great U.S. Open history, but he's been playing better golf here recently. So I could see him see somebody making a case for him at 7,500. I think that's a pretty good price. He said who else?
The last two. Oh, Pat Reed.
Pat, yeah, no.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of how I felt. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something. he's just so tilting. His putter might be worse than Molinari's. the last two, one name I've seen a ton, Shane Lowry at 7,300.
Yeah. I was watching a certain show today, and I didn't realize how much he was liked. I don't know. He has never been like somebody that I've really paid a whole heck of a lot of attention to. The good thing is he does have really good U.S. Open history, I do believe. And I think that's why a lot of people like him. Yep, second and ninth the last 2 years. But if I'm in that range, you know, because I think he's going to be more popular, so I'd rather take a shot on like maybe a Bud Cauley or Adam Hadwin or Woodland, who all hit it just as far and are going to be less owned. So he's kind of in the fade for me at this point, just due to ownership.
All right. Yeah, I could probably ask you a million more, but I'll keep it to this one because it was actually a question from a listener. Thoughts on ownership and just overall on Schwartzel this weekend?
Yeah, I think Schwartzel, I have not seen his name at all. I think he will go probably, if you said that 10% owned, I would say under. I think more people will kind of go toward Cabrera Bello. He's usually more popular. I don't know where to peg Charles. I'm not on him. My issue with him is he's going to be more popular because of his name being top of the leaderboard last week. Same thing with Rafa. They're going to be more popular. They don't hit the ball particularly straight. And Rafa cannot chip. So, and then of course, Charles got the wrist injury. You know, if he hits it in the fescue and then that flares up. So I would just rather not. I mean, for me.
All right. And we don't even have to talk on these. I'm just going to mention to the listeners. I am a big Hadwin guy, and Jesse knows this. Like, he's my boy. But he's a cut machine, if anything, for you, for at least a cash game. And a guy that's always low-owned, it feels like, for GPPs and cash, Brendan Steele at 7,100 is worth a look, in my opinion, if you want to go on the lower end and – he's very rarely owned high. So,
yeah, I can get behind those things.
Yeah. Something to think about there. Let's get into the last group in the 69 and below, the ultra value plays. And there's some ones. Our boy Flatbill's in here. And we got some other ones. This is the Team D-Gen department. what are you looking at on the 69 and below?
One thing to consider here is that a lot of these guys are going to be really, really popular. So, like you just said, Pat Perez, he's a well-known name. I expect him to get some ownership. Leishman, I think he'll get some ownership too. So one strategy to kind of consider is to kind of go with a guy above or below those if you like him, or right around that same price range. If you've got a little bit more money, spend it. If you want to just leave some on the table, don't, and go down. But these guys will be the popular type of range because, again, we're talking about stars and scrubs type of lineup here. One guy who kind of jumps out to me and I'll always roster a little bit of is Emiliano Grillo. He's just really kind of you know, he's just one of those guys who's just pretty consistent, like you just said about Hadwin and about whoever else you just mentioned there, Steele. They're just kind of – they're not really going to flash anything crazy or do anything. They're not going to make – a lot of eagles and not maybe a lot of birdies, but they're just consistent golfers. And I think he's a good play there at 6,900. Lucas Glover, former winner, 6,800. I mean, you get another winner there of a U.S. Open, 6,800. And everybody else, I'm not really a huge fan of this region, but like Ben On, I'll have a little bit of him. I already talked about Leishman. I think he'll be popular, but I think he's worth a shot. So those are kind of the guys in the upper 6,000 range. And then once you kind of get down below about 6,600 is when the ownership will really, really thin down. So if you're looking for flyer potential, you know, you're going to want to go below 6,500, somewhere in that range. Like you already said, Pat Perez, he's down there at 66. Jim Furyk finished second in the U.S. Open last year, 6,600. I'm not going to play any Jim Furyk, but I'm just saying this is the kind of people down in this range. So there's a lot of potential.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of the Masters.
Yeah.
When you down below there, it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But one name at the 6,600 range, Graham McDowell, has really, really good U.S. Open history. He's the former champion of the U.S. Open. He's a cut maker. For one thing, if you're, you know, you might not win the whole thing, like I said, because you need top 10 guys, but you still need 6 of 6. That's not the worst guy, and he usually gets overlooked unless I'm missing something this week.
No, I could get behind that. He has been a cut maker pretty much since he was chalky at the Puerto Rico Open. Ever since then, he's just pretty much steady golf, making cuts. Somebody had mentioned in a chat I was in earlier his name, actually. So, you know, he makes sense if you're down here in $6,600 range. He would be, I think, a really, really good play. Kind of going back to what you just said, this is a unique golf tournament in that instead of top 70 in ties, we're at top 60 in ties. So there's going to be like 156 golfers that start, and then they're going to cut down to 60. So almost 100 golfers are going to get cut. And so the attrition rate here is just going to be massive. If you get 6 of 6, small GPPs, you have a chance to win it all. Millie Maker type GPPs, like you said, you got to get top 10s at everybody. But, you know, you're going to want to focus on the cut maker guys, in my opinion. I don't know. There's not a whole lot of risk that needs to be taken, just given the fact that pretty much DraftKings says, here, make whatever lineup you want to.
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of thinking, you said it and I agreed with the, you know, the kind of middle pack approach. You're not going to win it all, but if you almost went cash game approach this week, even in like a single entry or a 3-entry max, you should cash pretty well, right. I think.
With a chance just to win. Time.
Yeah. Because you got like, even in the low range, Stuart Sink's a cut machine. You got some like Sean O'Hare's interesting. And these are guys that aren't played often. JT Poston, he's tilting as tilting can be, but he's been playing. He has that one round that makes you want to break something, but when he goes off, he goes off. So, yes. I mean, there's one question I have.
There's going to be one or two down here in this range that make the cut and probably get inside the top 25.
Oh, definitely.
And that's going to pay off massively. But who is it going to be? You know, it's a crapshoot down here.
Hell, there'll probably be someone below 6,500 that I won't even look at that'll do that. And it's just not worth my time. Because I'll pull the last hairs out that I have. So, yeah, I'm not going to ask you a bunch about this range. This range is absolutely loaded. If people have questions for him, hit him up at DFS Golf Gods. He's always available to help. But there's like almost seems like 30 golfers down there, so we're not going that direction.
You talk forever.
Let's talk. What are some of your top lower-owned GPP plays you're targeting? Any price range?
It's really, really difficult to project ownership at this point. I think, you know, if you asked me this on Wednesday, I would have a better idea. But I think Brandon Grace will probably be under-owned at 86. I don't think a lot of people are going to be on Jason Day. I think a lot of people have bad taste in their mouth, kind of what we talked about, recency bias. I think potentially Jason could be the lowest owned of the guys above 10,000 there. So if he is, that's a great play in my opinion. And then Paul Casey, I mean, I hope he flies under the radar. I'll have a lot of Paul Casey this week. Just because he's surrounded there by Justin Thomas, who I think will be popular. And then Duffner, who I think will be also be popular as well.
And there's a lot to be said about those Euros. I'll probably make a couple all-Euro lineups. You're playing Lynx style, which is their backyard, and right. and you're playing with wind and weather conditions. This is like British Open 101 right here.
Yeah,
this is what they thrive in. So I'm not going to say you look at guys that fared well in the Open, but I'm saying kind of look at guys that fared well in the Open, because if the conditions play right, this could be their wheelhouse. That's why guys like Graham McDowell and, you know, Paul Casey and Shane Lowry, they contend here. Like, there's a reason. So definitely something to look into. I like the Jason Day pull. He's been so close lately. You can tell ever since his mom's thing kind of it got better and he's got back to golf, he's been so close to really busting out, it looks like. So I could see this being a good weekend. He's got good U.S. Open history. Definitely something to look at there.
Yep.
What are some of your top cash game plays? I guess we kind of talked about most of them already, but any we didn't hit?
We did. You know, like I said, in cash, there is absolutely – this week there is zero reason to take any chances. So if I have any doubt in my mind that this guy – you know, if it's more than 50-50, that he's – if it's more than 75-25 that he's going to miss the cut, I'm not going to play him in cash. I'm not a huge fan of cash this week, other than but just because the cut is so the cut initially is going to be so large. Other than there's going to be a lot of new money flowing into DraftKings DFS, PGA DFS. So there's going to be some quote unquote fish or new people to kind of take advantage of in that aspect. But at the same time, you know, I've backed way off on cash here recently, so I've not been playing a whole lot of it just because I've been focused more on GPP. But, you know, if I'm playing cash, I'm probably starting with Sergio, and then I'm getting either Adam Scott or Paul Casey right off the bat, and then going from there.
Okay. And last,
you can even go Scott Casey and be fine.
Yeah, it's not bad at all, actually. It's a good starting point. Last but not least, a couple of the must-own guys, like kind of building blocks that you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said earlier, Stinson's probably my number one. Just because, like I said, it's just simple lineup construction. It makes you different straight off the bat. But even starting with Scott or starting with Paul Casey and GPPs is still going to make you different. And then just forcing yourself not to go above them. It's hard because you'll dip down. You're like, oh, I like this guy. Oh, now I've got 10,000 left. So, I mean, go up and get Sergio. It's fine. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you have to kind of stay disciplined as far as down too much and just trying to get too cute. You know, I put it in the article this week, keep it simple. And it's one of the things that has helped me more than anything else in life, but also in gambling.
No, it's so true. It's like, it sounds silly. You chuckle, I chuckle, but it's so true. When you start overthinking things, that's why it's like, it's funny. Some days, even for baseball, it like, you know, golf really well. I know baseball really well. So there's certain days I'll be so busy and I never really got to research a ton. And I build a couple of lineups just to have action. And those are like my better days. It's just, you don't overthink it. You know what you know and you go. It's funny.
No,
there's something to it.
You know, if I set a lineup and I just leave it and I don't mess with it, I'm all the time better off than going back and changing this, that, or the other just because I saw somebody say this, that, or the other. And it's just trust your gut and just keep it simple and just you know, just let stuff go.
One thing I started doing recently is if I started having those feelings, I just make a new lineup and I leave that one alone.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I mean, just do heads. That's fine. But just don't mess with something that you liked initially just because you feel like you have to change it. You know, it's just not a good strategy. It's really, really bad.
Because one thing I will recommend, like for people playing any DFS sport, but especially golf, it's really good is Twitter is great for it. There's so much information out there. But that's the bad part. There's so much information.
Yeah.
So you got to pay like filter.
I agree.
Okay,
let's get your judgment.
Yeah, let's get into some betting. What are some of your your picks to win this week?
So I just got Bovada pulled up here and just looking at some of the odds they have. I could get behind you know, single winners or whatever. Henrik at 28-1, I don't think that's bad. Adam Scott, 30-1. Keimer, 66-1. And even maybe potentially a little sneaky type of flyer of like Tyrell Hatton up to 100-1. You know, he's not being talked a lot about, and I didn't mention him earlier, but he's the kind of guy that at 100-1 gives you pretty good value there.
Okay, I like it. Any other bets you're looking at, or are you just kind of still looking into things?
Supposed to be the Kevin portion of it. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to hop on with us. But there's a lot of good guys who I follow and, you know, who follow me on Twitter, and we have interactions, and they are way more on the up and up on that kind of thing. I love watching people bet the first round leaders, though. I think that's really fun to do, but I've just never gotten into it. I don't know.
Well, see, I love following those guys with the first round leaders before FanDuel changed their format, because they're usually value guys. And if those guys were high on them, I'd throw the darts on them for the first four round or the first two rounds. If they made the cuts, even better. But just go low the opening round, you're ahead of the game.
That makes a lot of sense, dude. I never even thought about that.
I started doing that towards the end, and I was because then you can load up the weekend guys.
Right,
it's crazy.
Right.
But yeah, tons of guys to follow, like NYC Punter and all those guys. There's a bunch of them. Let's get some predictions before we wrap it up. You've named a few, and we'll kind of recap. I know we're repeating it, but maybe people will catch on by the end that who you really like. what are some of the surprise guys? Who do you think no one's gonna no one's gonna see coming?
There's a couple guys we actually didn't talk about either one of these, and they're really, really their price is really low on DraftKings. Aaron Rye, R-A-I. He's a guy who nobody knows about, will be less than 1% owned, but it's kind of like an accuracy type of dude, plays a lot of Euro, and he won the Kenya Open. Yes, they have golf in Kenya, apparently. Nice. So I think he's worth a little – you know, flyer, little Millie Maker type of deal, make the cut, potentially get inside the top 30, pay off for you. Another guy that I've heard kind of floated around, Stephen Yeager. I don't know a whole heck of a lot about him, but he's 6,300. So he's really, really low priced, and he'll be way, way under owned. Nobody will hardly be on him. So I think that, you know, there's going to be somebody like that who makes the cut and then makes a run inside the top, maybe potentially 10 on Saturday, and then eventually fades away on Sunday when the pressure gets too good or too great. But those are two of the kind of guys that I think could do that, have the potential to do that. And as far as the big names go, I think it's a good week for Paul Casey. I mentioned him before. I just have a good feeling about Paul this week.
No, I like that. Paul, you know, he doesn't do it every week, but it's similar to like the Henrik thing. When he makes cuts, he contends.
Right.
And there's something to that. What about a guy like Thornberry, who had a big weekend last week, and he's probably gonna be chalkier because people realize that compared to these other guys, but it's a big weekend for him. I think Kip, that fun caddy follow on Twitter, I believe he's going to caddy him. So what are you looking at with him?
Is he in the field?
Yeah, as far as I saw earlier, I saw someone post a bet on him. I could be totally wrong. Is he not on the field now?
I don't know, to be honest with you. He's just not on what I was just looking at there.
Oh, maybe he didn't get in. I swore someone said he got in.
I don't think he's in.
Okay, well, that answers that question. Don't play him, people. I didn't think he was because of the whole amateur thing, and then I swore I saw somewhere today, but – just more proof you can't trust everything you see on Twitter.
I think he gets into the Masters for winning the – because he won the NCAA. So I think he gets into the Masters, and then he probably will get into like the 2018 – I don't know about the U.S. Open, but like he might get into the British Open and the Masters next year. I don't know. He'll get some – but he's not in this. I think he had to probably Monday qualify and he didn't.
Yeah, no, you're right. So he's nowhere in the names. Okay, cancel that one. What are some guys that you think everyone's just all over and going to be massively disappointing this weekend?
Rom. I think Rom is going to disappoint a lot. And I like DJ, but he's got to win in order to pay off that price. And so I think he's going to probably end up disappointing about 25 to 30% of the people who roster him when he doesn't win and then they don't win big money. So, I mean, I'm not totally against playing DJ. You have to get different if you play him, but I don't know. I just don't see him winning. Something's in his head. Something's weird going on with him right now.
Yeah, before the quote-unquote accident, he was as lights out as anybody I've seen since, like, the Tiger days. It was scary what he was doing out there. But since then, you know, he's competed and whatnot, but he has not been that guy. Right. It's almost like Tiger when he first came back and all of a sudden kind of fell to the pack. It was kind of one of those things. So that's a good point. And he also said something we talk about a lot is his price tag is so high, he has to win at worst, like top two or top three at worst.
Right.
He has to be up there. And if anything below a top five, you're losing. You're not getting. Yeah,
you'll be lucky to cash unless you have a lot of other good plays on there.
So that's a great point you mentioned there. Okay, prediction time. Who's your winner?
Man, put me on the old spot. I'm just gonna go with I'm gonna go with Paul Casey. I don't know. He's just I've got a feeling about him. Now, if it wasn't Paul Casey, I would say it's Henrik Stenson, but like I said, I think he's gonna be more of a popular pick. So I'm just gonna step out on a limb here and just say Paul Casey. And by the way, Paul Casey is currently, if you wanted to bet him single, 50-1, which somebody I should have mentioned whenever I was talking about the odds, but 51 is really good value on Paul Casey.
Especially as much as you like him, you got to put a little scratch.
I should sprinkle something, man. I don't have any money in the account, so.
There you go. But, yeah, you said three Euro guys, and like I said earlier, there's a lot of Euro loving for a good reason. What you, if you still have the odds up in front of you, mm-hmm. What are the odds on Sergio?
He is 22. He's He's the eighth favorite. Yeah, I can get behind 22 on Sergio as well.
Yeah. I was thinking 15 or less, probably not. 22 is not bad, just because I think that monkey's finally off his back. This could be interesting. You've seen how that you saw what Dustin did when the monkey is off his back. Right. Could be interesting. Definitely interesting.
And 2 years ago, you know, Jordan Spieth won the Masters and turned around and won the U.S. Open. So it's possible. Sergio's got the head to do it. I wouldn't like say he's a good cash play. Anytime I say somebody's a good cash play, then I really like them.
Well, honestly, like we kind of beat around the bush on it a few times, but if I'm building cash lineups, I'm staying below 10K. I'm staying middle of the pack. I don't see any reason to go crazy.
I wouldn't either, just because I think a lot of cash teams will start with – I think, you know, a lot of cash teams have gone stars and scrubs, and it's just not necessary. Not this week, not the way pricing is. You know, I totally agree with you on that. Stay right at – if you want to start with a star, start with Sergio and just try to work your way down, but don't go too far down.
Yeah. All right, before we wrap it up, I want to give a shout-out to somebody. I don't even know him personally. I know you talked to him a few times, but if you are playing PGA DFS, give @CutSweats a follow. That is a lifesaver, and he has built a website that I know Jesse's dug into. It's got all kinds of stuff on ownerships and cuts. Very impressive. Yes. Very impressive, especially for the PGA DFS world. So I want to throw that out.
He's done a great job on that all for free, too. That's one of the coolest things. You get an update every 30 minutes on how many people are making the cut. It'll be really, really popular to look at that this week in particular. And then, you know, if you don't care to, another bunch who I talk about a lot in the article is Fanshare Sports. You don't check their webpage, you should start, because it's really, really easy to see who the chalk is going to be. And avoiding the chalk in golf is half the battle.
Mm-hmm. No, so very, very, very good points there. Anything else you want to mention before we wrap it up?
That's it. Well, who do you got? Who you like to win it? I never did that, and you never did say.
I can't. If I have to go up top, I'd say Sergio, but that's kind of chalky. That's not as fun. feeling about him. If I got to go farther down, man, you got me talking into Casey all of a sudden. I can't believe that. I was looking at a couple of the foreigners. Like, I like Peters, but that sounds chalky. I don't know. I haven't narrowed it down yet. It's kind of a tough one. I'm pretty much staying away from the USA, as bad as that sounds. It's just a weird feeling this week. But I got nothing. I'll go Sergio. Just to make a pick, I'll go Sergio.
I don't think it'll be as chalky as you think. At least I hope not. But
yeah,
we'll see.
So I think he's gonna be pretty solid.
Yep.
But all right, man. Again, thanks for joining us as always. You can check Jesse out on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods and his article weekly at thesportsdegens.com. He's been doing it for over a year now, and it's been awesome. Really, really good stuff every week. It's like clockwork, so it's good stuff. As always, Jesse, thanks, man.
Thank you, Bubba. Happy to be here again. We'll talk maybe again after.
Yeah, well, there's a good chance. Like the Masters, I'll end up DMing you going, hey, you want to record again? Because that was pretty epic what we just watched this weekend. But if for some random reason we don't, I'm always down to talk golf. So for now, we'll pretty much count on it. But if not, for some reason, if something comes up,
right on.
We got one of my favorite majors next, the Open, yep. Which I just love the Open. It's awesome. So enjoy this tournament. It's kind of going to be a little preview maybe of what you get for the Open, but maybe a little harder. So so check that out. But as always, guys, thanks for listening. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 41, your U.S. Open preview. Good luck this week, and hopefully get some good golf.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.